Hello and welcome to Season 1, Episode 8 of the Adrian and Joe Show, the podcast about all things business analysis, business architecture, business change, and much, much, much more besides. It's raw and it's time-boxed. And when we say time-boxed, we really, really mean it. Joe has set a buzzer, and when the buzzer sounds at 24 minutes, the podcast ends. I'm Adrian Reed, and as ever, I'm joined by my intrepid co-host, Joe Newbert. Hello, Joe.
Hello, Adrian.
How are you doing?
No, I'm doing well, thank you. Let me tell you a little bit about this episode. This episode is about stakeholders and their journeys. Stakeholder is one of my most favourite areas. I enjoy the organisation, the process, and the IT sides of business projects, but it's people that make the business operational. And I don't mean as cogs in the machine, simply as role players, tasks doers, and key pressers, but as named individuals and groups who hold real stakes and real influence. And I'm good, thanks for asking. How are you doing, Adrian? Is there anything else you'd like to know about today's episode?
Well, I'm doing well, Joe. And I mean, stakeholders, as you know, and stakeholder analysis, a topic that is very, very dear to my heart. Very, very relevant subject for all of us, I would suggest. So I think what I'd really like to know, Joe, is who's our guest today?
Okay, Betsy Stockdale is our guest on today's episode, Adrian. Betsy is a business architect with C-Level and someone who is passionate about stakeholder journeys. And as someone who has written many blogs and presented at conferences on the topic, Betsy has both influence and power on the topic. And she agreed to come on. She didn't block us, so there's a good attitude there too. Welcome to the Adrian and Joe Show, Betsy.
Hi, welcome. Thank you very much. And gosh, what an intro. I don't think of myself like that at all.
well, we're really pleased you could be here.
No, absolutely. Sorry, carry on, Betsy.
I was going to say, thank you for asking.
Yeah. I want to start off this episode with some opinion. I'm keen to get your take, Betsy. My personal feeling is that projects tend to focus on technology and methodology in preference to people. Yet it's people, it's the stakeholders, it's the creators and the consumers who are integral to the making or breaking of projects. Do you think that stakeholders get the amount of focus and attention they deserve on business projects?
I don't. I actually agree with you. I feel so often that because people can be messy and hard, that it's so much easier for us to focus on the technology and what can technology do, and we forget or choose not to deal with the people side of things.
That's interesting. So you sort of see technology and methodology as an excuse, something else maybe to bury our heads in rather than deal with tricky stakeholders?
Absolutely. Especially if you happen to have some difficult stakeholders, it's just so much easier just not to deal, especially those who tend to be more introverted. Yeah, not going to deal at all, right? I'll just focus on the task at hand. We'll make sure that the technology is there and that it works and it tests terrifically. And we tend to forget about the whole, well, gosh, people have to use it. And we have to pull that information and elicit information out of people. And we have to deal with the fact that people are different and they have a lot of things going on in their heads and their brains and their jobs and their lives. And it's just so much easier not to have to worry about that.
Yeah, isn't it really? I mean, if only it would, but my feeling is there that we sort of defer the pain, don't we? I mean, we've often seen these charts, which obviously talk about the cost, the expense of fixing something much later on, rather than dealing with it at the beginning or at the point that something happens. So surely by ignoring stakeholders, we're just deferring some pain in some way.
Absolutely. And not only is it deferring it, and it maybe this will be like passing the pain to somebody else. Because so often as a business analyst, we may get involved at the very beginning, we may help out with a little bit of testing, We might even help out with the implementation aspect, but then it's somebody else's problem to deal with the whole maintenance aspect and the fact that maybe somebody is not happy with how this turned out or they're not using it. I did my job, so this is your problem, support organization or maintenance organization.
That's really interesting, Betsy, and everything you're saying there resonates so much with me. When you're explaining like the messiness, that it's messy and it's hard, it's almost like, well, if we ignore it, if we pretend it's not there, we've got the illusion of control. Like that thing's so scary and uncontrollable. If we ignore it, then we can pretend we're in control.
Yep. And in reality, we're not.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So we commonly talk about stakeholder analysis, stakeholder management, stakeholder engagement, stakeholder mobilization, many other terms as well. But what does that really mean? What is it that we're really trying to instigate with those type of techniques?
So traditionally, what I have seen is people want to know with stakeholder management, they think of, well, here's how I'm going to communicate my status, or here's who I need to maybe get approvals from because, you know, we're spending so much time or money, or even here's the person that's got the influence. And so they're like the most important stakeholder that I have to worry about. But I think the part that we don't focus on is understanding sort of their perspectives. The story I like to tell is I was working with a group. They were looking to improve their processes and they had lots of complaints, right? It's a business analysis group and, you know, oh, management, they're always asking for X and the development organization's always asking for Y. And so we actually did an exercise where we put ourselves in their shoes and it's like, well, all right, let's think about the executives and management. Well, what is it that they're feeling and seeing and kind of go through the senses with an empathy map? And it really kind of changed the group's perspective of, oh, okay, yeah, well, they've got a lot of pressures coming from different sides. So maybe that's why they're acting the way they are, or they're giving us pressure because of what they're experiencing. And I think it really helped people to understand those sort of perspectives that, you know, the people we're dealing with, this is why they're acting the way they are. And then we could adjust as an organization, as business analysts, around that and help either capture or at least understand it and maybe know what to do or not to do to yeah. trigger some of these undesirable reactions that they were getting.
Yeah, you know what this is bringing to mind? It's an example that it's an example I talk about a lot. It was a good while ago, but I remember I was working in an organization that was implementing a kind of standard desk policy, a clear desk policy in a call center environment. And one of the things they were doing was some people had three trays, like three in trays on their desk. Other people had two, and they were standardizing mm-hmm. this to two trays. And the people who had three trays were absolutely, I cannot describe how irrational it appeared to me, but they were really unhappy. But it was only when we did some direct, you know, we went and really spent some time and asked them. It was because, the three trays, you only had three trays if you joined before a certain date. Mm. And the three trays to them signified status. So yep. I always think about this because what I took away from that is, to me, well, it's ridiculous. It's a tray. You're not even using it. But to them, it was like, no, this is my prestige. And once yes. I understood that, I'm like, okay, now I understand the resistance. Now I can start to have a conversation about how we together work out a way of resolving it. So those perspectives, when you said the word perspective, Betsy, that really, really, it's so key, isn't it? So, so important.
Absolutely. A project I just worked on, I had a manager that was just, it was interesting because she was focusing on the minutiae of different aspects of the software that we were building. But what the cause behind that was, is that she had a main person on her team that had been with the company for 40 years, and he was talking retirement.
Ah.
And he knew everything, right? He'd been there for 40 years. He'd been doing this job for 40 years. Everybody knew this gent. Everybody knew that he knew everything. If you asked him about something, he knew exactly either where it was or what the story behind it was. He knew it all. And nobody else did. And she just kept thinking in the back of her mind, this guy's talking about retiring. What am I going to do? Nobody has the knowledge that he has. I can't suck it out of him, right? And that was just this constant running theme every time we chatted with her and talked about, well, what sort of, you know, functionality do you need in this software? And it really came through. And understanding that helped us understand, again, her perspective. And also, I think, tweaked the design of the software to make sure that we were starting to take into account some of the things that she needed, because this guy is going to retire in 2 years.
Yeah, and that's really interesting, isn't it? That there's the, like, the espoused need. There's what people say they need, mm-hmm. and there's all the tacit stuff that they don't even think they don't even think to say. It's so hidden in their unconscious mind. They're not actively not saying it. It's just, unless we tease it out, it doesn't come out.
That is correct. Yep.
It doesn't, and I'm thinking, so earlier I mentioned sort of power and interest, which are traditionally the two axes that we sort of measure a stakeholder on, really, before we go away and, you know, put together a plan of how to deal with them. But bringing in this sort of third dimension of knowledge, which for me is experience, and it's the potential contribution that somebody can bring to a project. And how can we move beyond this sort of traditional textbook of techniques like the power interest grid and the stakeholder plan to really understand somebody's perspective, but not just their perspective, the contribution and the value, the knowledge and the experience that people can bring to projects? Because surely that's where the value in stakeholder engagement is.
Absolutely. So I've started using a few tools that really have seemed to help me a lot. First one is using personas. And I know personas tend to get, you know, caught up in thinking of like marketing or, you know, maybe product management. And I think personas are really good. I use them all the time too, just trying to understand who like the end user is. But I think even using them in a very lightweight, so it doesn't have to be super detailed, but very lightweight on who the stakeholders are, and understand what their role is, maybe understand the difference between what the title that they have in the organization is and understanding what role they're actually playing in the organization as well as on the project helps. And then I like to take those and move it into what I mentioned earlier, this empathy map thing. I stumbled across empathy map in a book called Game Storming. And the empathy map really takes a look at a particular persona, and it takes a look at a particular scenario, and then goes through those senses. What is that person seeing? What do they hear? What are they thinking? You know, what are they saying? And understanding kind of what it is that they're doing from those senses perspective really kind of helps me put myself in that person's shoes and start to look at things from a different way. And I have found that those two little tools help me tremendously. They don't take a whole lot of time. I will say the first time you create a persona or the first time you create an empathy map, you know, may take a little bit more time, but once you kind of get the hang of it, I can go through those fairly quickly, and it really does give me a different perspective when I'm going into elicitation sessions. And when I'm looking at, well, how do I write these user stories? How do I write my acceptance criteria, right? What is it that I really need to make sure that I'm covering?
I think that's wonderful. It flips from what we typically do. An example I often share with people when I'm talking about stakeholder analysis is I have this view that we can be quite selfish. And what I mean by that is we involve people that we think should be involved. And that comes from our BA hat, yet other people would like to be involved for reasons that we're possibly not aware of. And we don't involve them, as I say, because we don't think they should be involved. And a really easy example of that is a tester. So often testers are left very late in the process. They're not involved in the requirements. They're sort of given the output of what business analysts do. But if we were to involve them because they believe they've got a stake in this, a stake to be involved sooner, it's helpful. And so your empathy maps and your personas, for me, are really taking a view of why other people may feel that they should be involved. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, absolutely. And for the record, I've got a testing background. I love including my testers in the review of requirements because they're looking at it from a testing perspective. Can I test that? And if they say no, I've got more work to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And right. If the tester doesn't understand it, my developers are not going to either. So absolutely, those are fantastic. And I also like in elicitation sessions to ask, who else should I be talking to?
Who else is always such a great question.
Absolutely. And leave it open-ended and just, you know, to see what comes out. And it's interesting sometimes the people that you will be recommended. And it's, I think, very, very impactful.
Absolutely. And as you were saying that, Betsy, I was thinking, as we ask who else, we get a broader range of stakeholders, which is really important. But as we get a broader range of diverse stakeholders, what we often get is diversity in opinion, which is a good thing. But with diversity of opinion often comes differences in perspectives, disagreements and conflict. And clearly we don't want to avoid those conversations, but how can we work with our stakeholders to better resolve those conflicts, those sort of, and sometimes it's like the elephant in the room, isn't it? Everyone knows that yep. person and that person don't agree, but nobody says it. How do we get past that?
You know, a lot of times I think it's, first off, you start with, by the way, here's all the things that we do agree on, right? And let's find that common ground. Now, we have this topic over here that we don't have agreement on. And I will try to take a very neutral role in kind of facilitating that discussion. But to go through and understand, and I think a lot of times it's also understanding people's wants versus their needs. And, you know, understanding the needs behind those wants, because the wants get to be very, you know, this is what I have to have, but you don't necessarily hear why they want to have that. And those are the needs. And once we have the needs understood, I think a lot of times that helps us find that common ground and come to a good compromise.
It's really interesting, isn't it? I mean, I know as BAs, we use a lot of techniques, but I find that with user stories, and I know there's always a little bit of controversy around this, but I find that often the so that is the real mm-hmm. requirement. Whereas, you know, and I find I guess we all do, but I iterate. You kind of iterate round until you get to the actual need, the actual requirement.
Yes, absolutely. And the so that is, it can be very difficult to write. And I know a lot of people who just want to leave that off. No, I just want to do the first two parts as a, I want to, or, you know, whatever. And it's like, no. There should be a reason why we have to do this. And it's that, so that, and it is so hard.
Yeah. I sometimes wonder, like, you know, there's five whys as a technique. I wonder if there should be a five so that. It's like, okay, so you achieve that.
I like that.
So the gaps in understanding and elephants in the room and differences of perspective. I mean, I think it'd be quite interesting to talk about two particular roles, which for me is the PM and the BA. And you mentioned earlier sort of not doing it and hoping somebody else picks up the job of doing it. And for me, that's often what happens between the BA and PM. that they sort of look to each other and often stuff falls between the cracks. And in terms of their perspectives, I often think that actually the PM has a certain role to play in stakeholder analysis and management, and the BA has one as well. And they're not really in conflict, but they're probably quite supportive of each other. Do you have any views about how those two roles can come together in order to handle stakeholder management?
Absolutely. I think, as you had mentioned, they need to be a team. Those two roles should be a team. And it's not one's working for the other or vice versa, or that there should be a conflict there. It should be, hey, we've got to work through this all together. Maybe I'm not comfortable talking to this particular stakeholder. Mr. PM, would you help me with this? Or vice versa. And I think that, you know, if you develop that team mentality, it helps tremendously ensuring that as an overall project, we're really working to make sure that we're doing the right thing for our ultimate stakeholders.
Yes, yeah, I agree. And it's almost project versus product, I suppose, in that, you know, the project manager's managing the delivery of something within its boundaries and constraints, be it time or money. And obviously there are stakeholders who have concerns around that. But also there are the various product stakeholders, the users and the special interest groups that perhaps have a stake in this thing too. So yeah, as you say, I think it's about teamwork, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely. And collaborating together to find what will work best. And if something doesn't work, you try something and it doesn't work, okay, great. For this particular project and this group, particular team, that didn't work, let's try something else and adjusting. And that just because it didn't work for this particular team doesn't mean it won't work on the next project with the next team. So, you know, having these various tools in our BA toolkit, I think is fantastic. And we need to remember to pull these out and notice, ooh, that didn't go so well. Okay.
Noted. So in the spirit of trying something new, then in the spirit of on the next project, sort of maybe attempting something a little bit differently, if I were to start one new stakeholder habit tomorrow, what would you suggest that I go away and begin doing?
I would suggest trying out the whole persona thing and just getting to know our stakeholders a little bit better. And, you know, especially when we think of management and senior management, they've got a lot on their plates, and understanding how best to communicate with them, even in elicitation sessions, I think is extremely valuable. Because they, you know, so many of them bring in with them a world of experience that if we can capitalize on that by working to understand how to communicate and talk with them better, gosh, that's just value that's beyond measure.
So tell me, are personas a private technique that I sort of jot down my opinions and thoughts on, or are they something I play back to the person I'm trying to sort of profile, as it were?
Well, I think they're more of a team sort of thing. I don't know if I would actually play it back to my, like, you know, using the senior management example, I don't know if I would actually play it back to them. That's probably, they don't have time for that. They're busy folks, right? They've got companies to run and that sort of thing. But I would probably actually work within my team to say, hey, here's what I've noticed and here's what I'm picking up on. What else am I missing? What else have you seen about this particular role and that particular persona? And build those together. Again, this is where your project manager could probably be very helpful, because they probably have a different sort of relationship, so they could bring in maybe some different perspectives to kind of round out that persona. And they don't have to be very robust either. So, you know, think lightweight, think agile.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Fantastic. Yeah. Agile, just enough, just in time. A great place to pause, as I heard the buzzer just go there, Joan.
It did.
So before we close, thank you so much for sharing so much insight with us, Betsy. What further resources are there? Where can our listeners go to find out more about these types of topics?
Well, so the company I work for, C-Level, and that's spelled S-E-I-L-E-V-E-L. Most people don't know how to spell it. We have a blog out there. It's under on our website under BA Resources, and that has a lot of information out there. I've given out a lot of information with regards to, stakeholder analysis and that sort of thing on the various blog posts that I've written. And you know, people can also find me out on LinkedIn under Betsy Stockdale, and I'm more than happy to chat and share and commiserate and anything else.
Fantastic. So
that's wonderful.
Check out the blog, connect with you on LinkedIn. So great, great. Yes. As I'm sure many people will.
I'm sure they will. We'll put all that in the show notes. So which really just leaves me saying thank you for joining us on the pod, Betsy. It's been wonderful to get your insights on creating a stakeholder journey, I suppose, which perhaps is a phrase that lifts it up beyond the traditional analysis and management that we think about. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me. I've certainly enjoyed myself.
And thank you to our listeners for tuning in. We appreciate your support. And as a keen supporter of the pod, please can you use your power to influence our ranking by subscribing on your pod player of choice, be it iTunes, Google, Spotify, and giving us a 5-star rating. And of course, you can keep the riff going by leaving your comments over on the blog at 168.fm. That's the words 168. Not the numbers. We'd love to hear what you think about planning stakeholder journeys and how you're going to take real action on this. Betsy and Adrian and I will join you there. Until then, keep growing.